You're listening to Radio Influence.
When you are looking for the best Bucs coverage, why not go to someone who's actually been on the field?
B-U-C-C-A-N-E-E-R-S. Go Bucs!
This is the only podcast for the Buccaneers by a Buccaneer. You are in the trenches with former Buccaneers offensive lineman Ian Beckles on Radio Influence.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In the Trenches. This is Ian Beckles. It's been an interesting week in football. If you think you know, you don't, because when you watch these games in the playoffs, I think I know I don't, because in some situations, you know, having a veteran quarterback is important. In some situations, having a great defense is important. There's a lot of different factors, but all games are won in the trenches. They really are, and that's the name of my podcast. Watching those games yesterday, you know, probably I would say especially that Jacksonville game, Jacksonville-Buffalo, two teams that got in, we'll say defensively, I guess. Buffalo, I'm not even sure how they got in, to be honest with you. But Jacksonville is a defensive team. And you can get to a certain point defensively, but your quarterback is going to have to do something eventually. Whatever the hell Jacksonville did yesterday to come out with a win, congratulations. I promise you they're not watching meetings offensively and patting each other on the back, because that was not pretty offensively at all. That Jags team yesterday won despite Blake Bortles not being able to complete Plant High School type throws. Plant High School has four quarterbacks on their roster that can complete some of the throws that Blake Bortles missed yesterday. He had 87 yards passing. You can go back and look in the history of the NFL. I don't know if a whole lot of quarterbacks with 87 yards passing have ever won before. Now, he added 88 yards rushing. That was kind of his thing. That was great. But he completed two passes longer than 5 yards. Two. I mean, that was bad. I mean, that was a liability. That is a problem. And it's going to be a problem going forward. They got, you know, they beat Buffalo. Congratulations. But that was not pretty whatsoever from Blake Bortles. He looked like the worst quarterback in the league. He really did. Actually, no. Peterman is from Buffalo. He's the worst quarterback in the league. When he came in the game, Tyrod Taylor came out, and Peterman came in. Peterman doesn't even look like he can win a game. Like, in the best situation, I don't think he can win a game. He doesn't even look like he could. But Blake Bortles, to me, is not ready for prime time. You know, looking at, around the league, you know, what happens is when the dust settles, it ends up being a bunch of legitimate, you know, quarterbacks that have been there and done that. Matt Ryan's still around. Drew Brees is still around. You know, obviously Tom Brady's around. Roethlisberger. Philadelphia's around because of Carson Wentz, who was an upper echelon guy. To me, the wild card team out there is Minnesota. I don't know if Minnesota isn't really good, because when I watch them, it's not the sexiest, prettiest thing in the world, but they do things very well. They're a very efficient football team, and they're a physical football team, and that's important. So I don't know what the factor is going forward of what's the most important thing to win in this league. For me, it's pass rush, period. To me, Jacksonville's pass rush won that game yesterday. That's what won. You know, to me, the New Orleans Saints pass rush won the game against Carolina. Now, when you have Cam Newton, who I watched yesterday, it was hardly Cam Newton's fault they won that. He lost that game yesterday. It was hardly Cam. The first drive, he brings it down and puts it right in Kelvin Benjamin's arms in the end zone. He drops it. Hey, I understand it's only 7 points. They try a field goal. They missed the field goal. But momentum-wise, if you take that first drive down and you score a touchdown and you have that feel, sometimes you just keep on flowing all game long, and they definitely lost that opportunity. But I thought the spread was Carolina getting 7 points. And I said, first of all, there's a good chance Carolina wins that football game. If they played that football game three more times. I bet Carolina wins twice. I really do. Because once you get into the postseason and Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers aren't worrying about Cam Newton's, you know, health anymore, and you can run him like they did the year he was in the Super Bowl, they become a different football team. That's a hard situation to stop. It's hard enough to stop a handoff, but when you got a 6'6", 265-pound athlete running out there on the outskirts with a bunch of little guys, that becomes a problem. And when you watch Cam Newton play, there's times on the football field where Cam Newton looks erratic. There's other times where Cam Newton will throw a couple balls, and I don't know if anybody else in the league ever could have made some of these throws. Like, he put a couple balls right on the money. Very, very impressed with some of the throws he made yesterday. And when you're looking at these quarterbacks, to me, the most overrated thing on a quarterback is his arm strength. Oh, he has a strong arm. I don't give a rat's ass how strong your arm is, because if you know what's going to happen, your arm doesn't need to be that strong. Accuracy is important, and reading defenses is important. Now, we've had Brad Johnson, who didn't have a very strong arm, win a Super Bowl. We've had Peyton Manning at the end of his career, doesn't have a strong arm, win a Super Bowl. But they're very intelligent football players. And Cam is turning into an intelligent football player in a weird way. He still has that ability, his athletic ability, which very few have ever had. But he still has that cannon of an arm, and he puts it on the money. I think his receivers let him down somewhat yesterday. So I think this year, what's really weird is there's a chance where there's an odd champion this year. There's going to be a chance that somebody wins a Super Bowl, and whoever their quarterback is, somebody's going to go, do you remember when, you know, because if Case Keenan wins a Super Bowl, you're never going to forget that. Or if Nick Foles wins a Super Bowl, you're never going to forget that. Those aren't names of quarterbacks who are going to win Super Bowl. Blake Bortles is not winning a Super Bowl. I'm not even going to bring that one up. That ain't going to happen. No way. The football gods will not let Blake Bortles win a Super Bowl. Or Tyrod Taylor. Or definitely not Peterman, who came in and he's awful. But Tyrod Taylor, who I don't know where he is. I don't know, because in the state of the NFL and quarterbacks right now, when you see a quarterback like Alex Smith, now, to me, if I'm starting a football team, I would certainly start it with Alex Smith, no doubt in my mind, no doubt. If you have a quarterback that won't lose for games for you and has the ability to win games for you, you can put good football players around here and you'll be fine. You don't have to have that superstar Cam Newton guy. And I watch a lot of Kansas City football. He doesn't get nearly enough credit, not even close. First of all, Alex Smith's a fantastic athlete. He's intelligent as hell as a football player. And let me give you some statistics from this year. Now, I was listening to the Kansas City game, and they're talking about Alex Smith and how his contract's up and how Kansas City's probably not going to re-sign him and how he's going to be a free agent. I'm thinking, man, this guy gets disrespected every damn where he goes, but all he does is win and take his team to the playoffs. Now, has he won the big game? Nope. Has it been his fault? Sometimes, sure, but are you going to take your team to the playoffs? You got a chance. Now, they're talking about Alex Smith going somewhere else and becoming a free agent or being traded on the offseason. I think Kansas City still has his rights, but he's going to be traded in the offseason. I believe he led the AFC in passer rating, and he led the entire NFL in passer rating over 20 yards. Like, that's long passes. He led the NFL in passes over 20 yards and passer rating, which is 131.4. That is unheard of. So what's the knock on him? He wins games. He's getting the ball down the field. He throws for a high percentage. He's an intelligent football player. He's a great athlete. What's the knock? Maybe you're not good enough around him. I remember what they used to always say, yeah, Alex Smith is a game manager. No, he's not. Alex Smith is a top-notch quarterback. And, you know, if you're going to give Case Keenan a lot of money, which Case Keenan is going to make a lot of money in the offseason, you got to give Alex Smith a lot of money. Somebody's going to give Alex Smith. Think of Alex Smith if Alex Smith was the quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. they'd be pretty damn good, yo. They would be pretty damn good. Blake Bortles is not the answer. No way. But if you give Alex Smith that defense and a running game, and that's the thing with, you know, watching all the games now, the teams that are running, now it's January, the teams that are running are the teams that are going to win the football games. Jacksonville, they ran the ball a little bit yesterday. Fournette doesn't look the same. I told you way back when, don't get excited over running back because they wear out. They all wear out. He's wore out already. He was wore out in college. So you spent that high draft pick on that guy. Congratulations. So, you know, when I was watching that Kansas City game, and I actually had some money on Kansas City, when Kelce left that game up 2 touchdowns, and that was a problem. And he is a problem in itself. The Tennessee game, Tennessee, obviously, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota will be joined at the hip for their whole career. And when it's all over, you're going to evaluate the two. You're going to see who was better, just like Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning. Now, that's not a very close race. It's been a very close race with Jameis and Mariota to this point. Mariota took the lead, no doubt. If you win a playoff game, you take your team to the playoffs, you win a playoff game, Mariota takes the lead. I don't know if I would switch, but it's getting to the point now where he's getting the upper hand because he did some special things on the weekend. For a young football player to do special things like that, you know, in that atmosphere, good for him. He definitely took a step forward. Now we'll see where they go from here. I didn't see Tennessee winning that game at all. I just didn't see it. And the other game over there with the Rams, I watched the Rams play, you know, 4 or 5 games this year. Man, their offense was gorgeous, was pretty. And they went out and it didn't look the same. Now you got a young quarterback, Jared Goff, who is young. Maybe the moment's not too big for him, but you just don't get very far with young quarterbacks. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So having talent is great. The quarterbacks are great, but the games are won in the trenches, that's for sure. Now, obviously, a big thing that happened this week was, last week, was John Gruden going to the Raiders, 10 years, $100 million. Some of the questions are being asked are, did the Bucks offer him anything? I believe the Bucks talked to him. I don't think the Bucks are ready to sell their soul to the devil, which is what the Raiders just did. Whether he's going to make up that money, I don't give a rat's ass if he makes up the money or not. And if everybody says, John Gruden's not worth 10 years, $100 million. Sure he is, because somebody paid it to him. And he's worth every last penny of it. And everybody thinks that's a ridiculous amount of money. If you're getting $10 million a year, and you make one playoff game a year, you're making that game up. You're making that money up easily. The NFL is littered with money. Don't worry about $10 million. That's not a big deal in anything to do with the NFL. That's no money almost. They all make over $250 million a year, every single team. And if the Bucks were out there, the Bucks didn't want to give him a 10-year deal, obviously. They're still paying 6 other coaches, it seems like. I think they're still paying Ray Perkins. I think that may be possible. But I don't know if the Bucks offered anything, but you got to think, as John Gruden, first of all, 10 years, $100 million will get you out of anything, that's for sure. But why would he want to come to Tampa Bay to a team he's already won a Super Bowl with? Because it's like he's done that already. Why would he want to do that? If you go to the Raiders and win a Super Bowl, that is going to be a big deal. If you go to Tampa Bay and win a Super Bowl, it's going to be a big deal because we suck. But we've been there already. He's been there already. And the expectation will probably maybe be a little bit higher here just because. But we'll see what John Gruden does, because John Gruden is a great X's and O's guy. I was around him before. He knows the offense as well as anybody that I've known, for sure. But when you deal with a 10-year contract and you have to be in a building and you're rearranging things and you're building things from the bottom up because it needs some more building, he stepped into a situation here in Tampa Bay where there wasn't much building made. I mean, the defense was already taken care of. All John Gruden needed to do was take some of the Glazers' money and get a few free agents, which he did, and Joe Jurevicius and Keyshawn Johnson and, a couple pieces here and there, and he was ready to roll. it's not quite that easy. And then there's the whole thing where John Gruden doesn't really play well with others. You know, the kid in the playground just doesn't play well with others? That's John Gruden. And when you talk about 10 years in building something, you got to build it with people around you that you trust and that you know are going to be ride or die type cats. I don't know if John Gruden has those people. I'm not sure. John Gruden throughout his career has fired a lot of people. He's wronged a lot of people. He's screwed a lot of people. And we'll see if he's able to, you know, have these relationships and still coexist with some of the people in those in the locker rooms and in the meeting rooms, the higher ups. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, John Gruden fired Rich McKay. And when you talk about Tampa lore and the history of Tampa Bay football, how are you going to do it without Rich McKay? And you fired Rich McKay. He just has a problem dealing with people. So I don't know how that's going to turn out. I really don't. You know, sometimes I say coaching is overrated, and it can be. But when you're a head coach, what you got to do is surround yourself with the right coordinators, the right coaches. If you look back to Tony Dungy, when Tony Dungy built this thing here in 1996, look back at the coaches that Tony Dungy had specifically on defense. Every single position coach that Tony Dungy had on the initial squad ended up being a head coach in the NFL somewhere. All of them. And some. And then when one left, somebody else would come in and they become a head coach. I mean, that's not by accident. He brought in a lot of great teachers. And that's what John Gruden's going to have to do. But anybody that comes and works for John Gruden is going to have to check their ego. They have to check it and almost eliminate it. He doesn't allow anybody else to have an ego in his presence. And that means coaches. That means front office people. That means players. If you have an ego, check it. Because he doesn't have it. He doesn't deal with it real well. If I had to compare John Gruden to somebody, ironically, it would be Donald Trump. He just doesn't deal well with people. And he's a genius. Because he told me. He's a level-headed genius. He's like real smart. Like real smart. Or he's very, very smart. Yeah. Yeah, John Gruden. Good riddance. Because everybody was begging for him to come back here. You didn't want him here, I'm telling you. You didn't want John Gruden here. Because they definitely sold their soul to the devil, period. I'm telling you. I got some Raider fans I know. They're all elated. I go, okay, well, enjoy yourself because I like good people. Now, the Bucs have the 7th pick in the draft. I had somebody email me and say, he asked me about a guard from Notre Dame, Quentin Nelson. I don't know much about it. I don't think I watched even one Notre Dame football game this year. The kid is 6'5", 330, which is unheard of. You don't see guards that big normally. If the kid can play, I'd love for him to be a Buccaneer. But with the 7th pick overall in the draft, you got to figure if this kid is that good, he's going to go in the first round. Don't waste your 7th pick on an offensive guard. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. If you're going to pick a guard at number 7, trade down. Trade down and then hope that this guy slides. I haven't watched his film. I don't know how good he is. I'm all for improving the trenches, though. I'm all for it. And, you know, I don't like rookie football players, and really nobody does. But if you could sprinkle a rookie football player amongst a bunch of other veterans, they can get by. They can get by. They're going to make their rookie mistakes, but everybody around them has to play better. That's for sure. So, you know, if you want to email me, you can always email me at IanBeckles@RadioInfluence if you guys have any type of questions. Now, I also can take questions on social media. You can follow me at Ian Beckles, IanBeckles. I got a question the other day. I've actually got this question a few times, and it was, should the Bucs change from a 4-3 defense to a 3-4 defense? I've been asked that quite a few times. Now, having played the game for a while, a 3-4 defense is a son of a bitch for an offensive line. If you play the 3-4 defense the right way, there's times where that's the longest day ever. Like, I remember back when we played, some of the great defenses were the Steelers, who still play a 3-4 like as well as anybody else. And the Giants back in the day used to play a 3-4, the real, real nasty. And the Saints used to as well. But all those teams right there have a lot in common. and the Bucks don't have it. It doesn't work like that. You just can't go from a 4-3 defense to a 3-4 defense. First of all, the Bucks aren't big enough to be a 3-4 defense. They're not big. A 3-4 defensive line, they're going to be, you know, 6'5", 320 guys, not real big pass rushers, more push-up-to-field guys. And what you do is you get a lot of pressure with your linebackers, rushing the passer. We don't really have a linebacker that would come up the field one-on-one against a tackle and make a whole lot of noise. I don't really see that. And the inside linebackers in a 3-4 defense are all big and burly, like Ray Lewis, not like Quan Alexander at all. Quan Alexander does not want to play in a 3-4 defense and have a guard come at him all day and he's not covered. He doesn't want that. So it sounds easy to just, you know, flip a coin or whatever, say, oh, I'm going to turn into a 3-4 defense, but, and we go vice versa. If a 3-4 defense turns into a 4-3 defense, they're not going to be fast enough. You got to have speedsters at will linebacker. You got to have an under tackle, three technique that's wreaking havoc up the field. And they're just two completely different birds. So this Buccaneers team hasn't played a 3-4 defense since, I want to say, early 90s. And that's not something you just want to come and switch. Plus, that's not Mike Smith's thing. Defensive coaches don't change philosophies because a philosophy for a 3-4 is completely opposite to the philosophy of 4-3 and vice versa. So Mike Smith's been teaching the same thing for his whole career. He's not going to switch it now, which could be the last year, in the Buccaneer uniform. If the Bucs don't go to the playoffs next year, Mike Smith will be fired. And Dirk Cutter will be fired, and Jason Light will be fired. They will all be fired if the Bucs don't go to the playoffs next year, period. Some of them, you know, some play they're lucky to get by this year. Maybe that's possible. But, yeah, it's not that easy just to clean things up like that. It ain't that easy. Now, there's a big football game on tonight, and that's the college national championship game. I'm going to try to get a little nap midday so I can stay up, since I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and do my show. But I got to figure out a way to watch it. Alabama, Georgia. Ironically, I didn't think the SEC was that strong this year, and you end up with two SEC teams in a national championship. I thought the Big Ten was a team, the conference that was strong, and they get no representation. So college football can be funny, but one thing that I know that's consistent is, you know, the Alabama Crimson Tide. You don't have to like them, but you do have to respect them. You know, the Crimson Tide and the New England Patriots, to me, are pretty much the same animal. You can bet against them if you want. It's a bad idea because they don't lose too often. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to put some money on Alabama. I mean, Alabama against a freshman quarterback. Nick Saban against a freshman quarterback. If Saban gets it done, it's going to be five national championships in 9 years for Saban. Five. And he was just in it last year and barely lost it. Barely. But just look at Alabama against a young quarterback. Now, let me give you another statistic that may be relevant to you or maybe not. Nick Saban has had many assistant coaches throughout the years. Kirby Smart is one of his assistant coaches. I believe they were together when he was at LSU. Nick Saban has gone against his assistant coaches 11 times, and he's 11-0 against his former assistant coaches. So, Nick Saban, all day long. I just think they're more equipped for a team like Georgia to not come out of nowhere, but be the first year to be great. And they may be great for the next 2-3 years. That's possible. But those guys in the Alabama locker room, for me, have been there, done that, been exposed to it. They're not going to be shocked by the moment. And, well, Nick Saban's going to have them ready. And Nick Saban always has his team ready. He always has his team ready. So that's going to be interesting for me to watch that. I don't see a lot of points being scored. I see it kind of being a grimy game. And grimy is really the way, you know, the Alabama Crimson Tide plays. They do grimy real, real well. That's kind of like their thing. Other thing I want to touch on before we get out of here is every year I kind of like to see who is a finalist for the Hall of Fame. And I've always said that all the names that surface for the Hall of Fame, they all deserve to go in, every last one of them. But they can't all go in. They all deserve to go, every last name. But they can't all go because there's a limit. The names that came out this week, what's great for me is all the names that are coming out now are guys I played next to or against. So it would have been really my era, I guess, of Hall of Fame football players. Tony Boselli is one of them. First name out there. He only played 7 years, so that might be something that would be a knock against him. But while he played, I'm going to let you know, there was not many better. Maybe none. I mean, I wouldn't put a lot of people's film up against Anthony Munoz, but Tony Boselli would be one guy whose film was gorgeous. We had Mike Mamula was our defensive end in Philadelphia, and he was a bust. He was a first-round pick. And I remember my buddy Steve Everett say, come and see what Boselli's doing to Mamula. And I'm talking about he was bending him up and putting him into a pretzel and then smashing his head into the ground. And I was like, I don't know how, I've never seen anybody do this before, but I thought he was going to kill him. And Boselli was a big, physical, mean football player, and I love that. So I was a huge Boselli fan, so I got to put Boselli in. Isaac Bruce, receiver with the Rams back in the day. I mean, that was the greatest show on turf. I guess it's possible it could hurt him that he had so many great players around him, but statistically, he was a wonderful football player. Brian Dawkins, I played with Brian Dawkins in Philadelphia. Got a chance to see him come in as a rookie. Turned into one of the better leaders in the history of the football. He's just a great leader, great football player, played through injuries, and I got a lot of love for him. Alan Faneca, a guard that I played during my years, great football player. It's just hard for guards to get in. Like, they're just not sexy. You know, I played guard. I love guard to death. They just don't get mentioned as much as some of the centers and the tackles. Steve Hutchinson, another guy, as good as it gets. Yeah, he doesn't get much better than that. Joe Jacoby is an older name. To me, Joe Jacoby is not a Hall of Famer. I mean, he was a good football player on some great football teams. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Edgerrin James, yeah, I can see it. It's just, there's a lot of other names. A lot of other names, and when these other names are coming up, a lot of them are bigger. Ty Law is a big name. Ray Lewis, regardless. Ray Lewis, first ballot. I don't give a crap what ballot Ray Lewis is on. For him to play for 17 years and be the best, might be the best ever. Done, over with. John Lynch, that's my guy. Not getting it. I don't see it. Kevin Mawai might be another guy, a center from the Jets. He may have a problem getting in. Randy Moss should be a first ballot, period. Terrell Owens should have been a first ballot. I believe this is a second or third, maybe second. Terrell Owens statistically should be in first ballot, but it probably won't happen. Brian Urlacher deserves to go. I think he'll probably get in first one. And Harrison Walls is a name that's been out there for a long, long time. Harrison Walls was a guy that would get six picks a game, a year, it seems like. And you don't see a lot of teams getting that kind of play from a lot of defensive backs these days. Although my boy from Jacksonville, Jalen Ramsey, is a bad son of a bitch. He can play, no doubt about that. So that's coming up soon, and we'll see who gets a chance to make it into the Hall of Fame, because, you know, it's just fun for me, because a lot of these guys I played against, some of them I played with, I know a lot of those guys from the other sidelines, and it's good for to see them guys get their recognition. All right, once again, Buccaneers season is over. That doesn't mean we're going to stop this in the trenches thing, because football is still going on. Even when the NFL is done, we're going to talk about free agency. We're going to talk about things going on. Also, I'm going to bring some special guests in the offseason as well, and talk to them and pick their brain a little bit about what's going on football, what they've been doing after they play, and, you know, pick their brains. I like guys like, you know, Al Baker, who played 9 years or so, borderline Hall of Famer. I'm going to get him in here. And some of my former teammates as well. So, In the Trenches isn't going anywhere. And we have a new sponsor, Hess Spinal. So, starting next week, they're going to be our main sponsor. So, we're going to be giving them a whole lot of love. I appreciate you guys listening in. This has been Ian Beckles and In the Trenches. Have a wonderful week. And please be safe. Peace out.
Follow Ian Beckles on Twitter at Ian Beckles for all the latest on your Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You have been in the trenches with Ian Beckles on Radio Influence. This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
We've had a good interaction with some fans talking about paying student athletes, and we've had a really good emailer that has put forth some well thought ideas and questions in relation to Tuesday's podcast and how we look at the whole process of paying athletes and the money that's available to it. And he brings up some good points that I want to address for him and for the other listeners out there. And he talks a little bit about the importance of players, and the games wouldn't happen without the players. And that's absolutely true. Of course, they wouldn't happen without the universities that they represent as well. Certainly, I do believe that there needs to be an increase in the stipend. But I think that there's some other things that I neglected to bring up and didn't do a very good job in the last podcast of going into as much detail as I have in the past. So I want to take the time to kind of go over it again and talk about the things that I think could be improved as far as making the student athletes' time on campus more comfortable. I believe that they provide a service and they work for the university. And in addition to their scholarship, I think what they do brings enough attention to the university and enough positive vibe and marketing to the university that it should provide not only a scholarship, which is worth an awful lot, but it should also provide them more money to be able to live comfortably. I don't believe they should be paid and should be paid money for their services, but I think the stipend should be equal. And I also believe, and I've said this before in the past, it was about 3 or 4 years ago when I spent some time going over this, and I do believe that for players, the particularly ones that have great marketing abilities with their skills, I do believe that taking a fund that is generated from likeness of players should be put in the fund and split three ways. One, to the school. Without the school, you don't have anything that you're representing. Two, I think it should go into a fund to help student athletes who are struggling with medical issues as a result of being involved with student activity playing. We talk about it a lot at the NFL level, but we don't talk about it enough at the college level. So I think money should be put into a fund there. And I think there is a fund that should be put for the player upon their graduation at the school. And I think that it could be worked to where the longer you stay at the school, the more money you receive. I think coming in for the one and done basketball guys or the redshirt sophomores in college football that leave early, you get less money because you didn't stay there long. I think that's only fair. You stay there full 4 years, you get more money. Money that's put in and invested for you for your future. I think those things are on top of what I mentioned the other day in terms of making sure that all of their clothing and housing needs are very well taken care of. In addition, obviously, to the best nutrition. If we're going to develop these players as coaches, we certainly need to do the best in terms of the nutrition in areas.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.